This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Arvind Yuvraj
and Christine Wong.
We, of course, will be with you as ever until 1 o'clock this afternoon. Stick with us if you want to get in touch with the show. We're on Twitter at BFM Radio and, of course, on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good weekend, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What did you get up to? You were eating some really delicious
chimichurri.
Chimichurri. That's what he
good
was doing
food
a weekend.
Bowls.
What about you, Chris?
I was doing chores.
Chores?
Yeah.
Chimichurri.
Chimichurris indeed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good stuff. Stories coming up on today's show then. We're going to be kicking off about some great marketing strategies you can borrow from the most successful Super Bowl ads. The title actually says stealing, but we don't advocate stealing, do we?
No.
No, we don't. We borrow. Then we have a couple of stories actually that wrap up. How a New Zealand company are trialing a four-day work week, which would be nice, which also ties into a story that I've got about how German workers have won the right to a 28-hour week following industrial action. What is wrong with me today? Then we have a story about gender pay gaps, and then wrapping up with a self-healing electronic skin that will help robots have a sense of touch. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, some events that we think you might want to check out later on in the week. Let's start off with the marketing strategies then, Chris.
Yeah, so the Super Bowl has been called the marketer's holiday for a good reason. At $5 million for a 30-second spot, it's one of the highest grossing media events in the world. And with all the hype around previews before the big game, it's become a frenzy to follow all the activity of the big brands before and after the game. So here are some marketing strategies that entrepreneurs can learn from the Super Bowl. The first one is to consider the environment. Context is everything. Make sure that you serve up your brand messages in a way that's appropriate to the environment. The example given here is from Fabrice, who reminded people who were throwing a Super Bowl party that there's a key ingredient that they shouldn't leave out. Now, the official description of the Fabrice ad says this: for someone whose bleep don't stink, yes, I'm not even making that up. It does say bleep. Dave turned out to be a pretty decent human being. Even his high school janitor had nice things to say about him. So even though it's unfortunate that Dave won't be at your Super Bowl party this year, you'll still have everyone else. And for everyone else, there's Fabrice.
Wow.
So, you know, keep it lighthearted. And also they've tied in this idea that, like, you know, you're having people around at your house and for the Super Bowl and stuff like that. And it's just nice.
And there's going to be a lot of protein.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That bean dip, though. Mm-hmm. All right. Right. The second thing is to use multiple channels. So the best Super Bowl advertising use multiple channels to spread a fully integrated campaign. They use YouTube, influencer networks, installations on site at the game, as well as other engagement on social media. The example here is Rocket Mortgage, which basically just flooded social media and YouTube and everything with who they were and what they do, which led to an online resource to learn more. And since it's highly likely that as a small business owner or entrepreneur, you won't be using broadcast advertising, it's even more important that you use a mix of media to spread your messages. Then the third thing is to lead with an insight. So the more emotional your connection, the more memorable the messaging, especially if it's tied to a product benefit. Verizon apparently had a really good ad. They honored first responders by connecting survivors with those who rescued them by, of course, having them place a call on the Verizon network.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And since small businesses are even closer to customers, finding an emotionally unique insight should be easier and more fruitful. The next thing is to make someone smile. So this was Amazon's ad for Alexa, where Amazon's virtual assistant answers in her familiar soothing voice and then coughs and conks out. Mm. This leads to a whole thing where they try to replace Alexa's voice to various people like Gordon Ramsay, Rebel Wilson, and Sir Anthony Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And it makes people laugh, and people remember when they laugh at things. Mm-hmm. The last thing is to rinse and repeat. So this was, I think, my favorite Super Bowl ad ever, which was from Tide. And basically what they did was they bought an ad in every quarter, and then they filmed each ad as a separate short spot in the genre of a different product that it was pretending to pitch. So it also starred David Harbour from Stranger Things, who I love. Mm-hmm. And so it had him in like a fake Old Spice commercial, a fake car commercial, everything. But it was secretly advertising Tide because they were all wearing clean clothes in those ads.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Those Super Bowl ads are not cheap. They're like, I think 30 seconds cost them about 5 million US.
Is that what you said, right? 5
yep,
million?
Five million.
Holy
smokes. For that 5 million, you have to make like an impact and you have to get people to remember what you're doing. Otherwise, it's a complete waste of money.
Right.
The two of my favorite this year was, one is the Cloverfield one. The movie has like mixed reviews, but then what Netflix did was they showed the trailer and then they said that the movie is available on Netflix after the game. So that is like immediate. No one has ever done anything for a movie like that ever before. The other one that I liked was the Dundee ad. So they had, you know, Crocodile Dundee?
Yes.
So Tourism Australia, they had like these trailers that dropped 3 weeks before the Super Bowl. It had Chris Hemsworth in it. Then Hugh Jackman showed up. Everything Australian in the world showed up for this Dundee, this so-called Dundee movie, but it was not a movie at all. It was just an ad for you to go to Australia. So it's by the tourism board there.
Smart.
So that was super smart. And Netflix did something that I've never seen the Super Bowl do before. So those are my two favorites. But I didn't watch all the ads, but judging from what you said, these guys have, you know, they pretty much know how to attack people watching the game, because you have to be loud and you have to be colorful as well. And people have to stop doing whatever they're doing at home to watch your ad.
To
pay attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's some really valuable lessons to learn there from the kind of strategies that they use, for sure.
All right. We're going to take a short break. Some music coming up from Blur with Song 2. When we come back, New Zealand company trialing a 4-day work week and how some German workers win the rights to a 28-hour work week following industrial action. Don't go anywhere. You listen to BizBytes here on BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to BizBytes. So if you are tuning into the news last week, you may have heard about a New Zealand company who are testing an initiative that will see its employees to work 4 days a week and still get paid for 5 days. Celebrations all around.
Yay!
Wow.
the move by trust company Perpetual Guardian is the first for a major business in New Zealand. The company wants to create a workplace fit for purpose for the 21st century. So it's a 6-week trial that applies to more than 200 employees in 16 offices around the country. The employees will work standard business hours during the 4 days. If effective, the scheme will be adopted full-time by July. The company's founder told one of the newspapers that by allowing employees to deal with family commitments, hobbies, and general life maintenance with the extra day off, he hoped that they would be more focused during the 4 days they spent in the office. And this is a quote. To be honest, some of those activities, family and life commitments, were being done within office hours. If you give people the chance to be good as they can be outside the office because they have more time, then you're going to get a better performance in the office. I think we can all agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
More rest, more productivity.
Mm-hmm.
That's been one thing. And then the German workers have won a right to a 28-hour work week following industrial action. So it's a collective deal that covers around 900,000 metal and engineering workers. It's expected to prompt changes across Germany and in other industries. It's only a temporary thing. They're allowed to do it for about 3 months, I think it is, before they pick it up again. And they're seeing how the trial works. But we've spoken about this no end of times, haven't we? This kind of idea of fewer working hours.
Just last week, I think, the story about the 4-day work week or something.
Yeah, it started, I think it first broken around the 9th, so just a few days ago.
Mm.
The idea, I mean, this is the German one has come up because one of the companies, they had this 3 24-hour strikes and workers downed their tools at a number of these companies in return for agreeing to shorter weeks. They gained a right to offer more workers 40-hour contracts, meaning the deal will offer a little bit more flexibility. I don't know. I mean, Germany is one of these countries where you know if the people there know that they have the right to be able to do this. They can argue against this and they can stand. Again, it's all about work-life balance, and especially when you're working in foundries or something like that where, you know, it's manual labor, it's very hard work.
Yeah.
An extra day off work will mean an awful lot.
Yeah. Would you rather have like a 3-day weekend where everyone has the same weekend, or would you do like a staggered thing? Like a batch of people get the Monday off and then the next batch gets a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
I think either would work, you know, and as long as at some point you're kind of rotated.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get Friday off perhaps in 1 week, in 1 month, and then maybe you get the Monday off in a different month.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would work, something along those lines.
Yeah, because I personally don't like weekends as much as I like weekdays off. Because you get to,
That's because your brain is telling you I should be at work.
Yeah. No, I mean because everything else is open. Because you get true. To you get That's to true. Do all the things that you are not able to do on the weekends. Like even banks. You can't make it to a bank on a weekday. So you get to do it on a weekday off. But you can't get to a bank on a weekend. Mm. So if people had like staggered leaves, like, you know, a batch of people on Monday and Tuesday, and the everything else is still working and functioning Monday to Friday,
right,
then it's more useful than having like a three-day weekend where right. nothing is functioning.
Right.
I mean, for me, it would depend on, you know, where that extra day is. Because if it's somewhere in the middle of the week, like if I had Wednesday off, but I still had a traditional weekend as well, that would be kind of disruptive for me. And I feel like I wouldn't be able to get a lot done because I would kind of forget that day wasn't available.
You'd be sat twiddling your thumbs.
Yeah. But if it was a one block, so like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Saturday, Sunday, Monday, then I would feel that was a little bit more productive because I can devote like that part of my week to my leisure stuff and my home stuff and all that stuff, and then I can focus at work.
Okay, we're going to move on. If you want to get in touch via WhatsApp and tell us whether or not you think a four-day work week would work for you, do let us know. Get us via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Or, of course, Christine is manning the Twitter station. Get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio, of course. We've got some music coming up right now. No, we don't, actually. We've changed things around a little bit. We've got some ads coming up right now. And then when we come back, on to story number three. Gender pay gap that is smaller for millennials than any other age groups, but could be increasing. That's all coming up in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is
Christine Wong.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Again, if you want to get in touch, tell us whether or not a four-day work week would work for you. Get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Moving on to story number three, the gender pay gap.
Yes. So what it is that the gender pay gap is actually smaller for millennials than other age groups, but it may be increasing. Recently, a lot of celebrities have been at the forefront of pay discrepancies. For example, for the film All the Money in the World, Michelle Williams was paid less than $1,000, while co-star Mark Wahlberg made $1.5 million for the same reshoot scenes.
Less than $1,000?
Yep.
Yeah.
And Mark Wahlberg made $1.5 million.
Which, by the way, they said that no one got paid for this. So they said for the reshoots, once they got Kevin Spacey out, the studios came in and said that none of these people are getting paid. They're doing it on their own free will, just to replace him with Christopher Plummer. But then the news came out that Mark Wahlberg got paid 1.5 and Michelle Williams got paid for allowances, more like just to show up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. So of course, the gender pay gap is still a very pressing issue in today's day and age. So Paychex and IHS Market Small Business Employment Watch studied small businesses, those with less than 50 employees, to find wages and wage growth rates based on gender and age group. They collected the data in September 2017 from the payrolls of its 350,000 clients. Mm. Now, this is what they found out. Among small business employees, young women still earn less than young men, but perhaps more concerning, wages for millennial men are growing at a faster rate than for millennial women with comparable jobs. So looking at the numbers here, women will earn $23.95 per hour, and their wage growth rate is 3.3 for overall, not just millennials, by the way. And then for guys, it's $30.59 per hour and 2.9 wage growth rate. But then you look at this stuff for millennials, right? Mm. So a millennial woman will earn $20.44 per hour, and their wage growth rate is 5.3%. But for guys, it's $23.03 per hour and a wage growth rate of 6.2%. So even though the gap of the actual wage isn't a lot, the growth rate is quite different. Mm. Now, this is what kind of worries a lot of people, right? Millennial women earn less across every region and industry than their male co-workers. And millennial women employed by small businesses are making 89% of what men are, information that is consistent with the economy at large. So this is just a whole thing where it just seems that even though the actual pay rate seems to be equaling out relatively okay, the rate at which the pay gap is increasing is actually going up and up and up. So even though it might be relatively equal now, in about like 5 years, it's going to be ridiculous again, basically.
I'm still shocked by this whole Mark Wahlberg thing.
Mm-hmm. No, he gave his money to the Time's Up Foundation after that, because I think there's a lot of pressure on him. And then he just donated the lump sum of 1.5 to the Time's Up thing. But the fact is, he got paid before that, and they didn't know that he's going to donate it. They were just paying him 1.5 to show up and do the reshoots, right?
And it's a nice little tax write-off as well.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, we've seen a lot of this kind of story pop up, especially in relation to the Time's Up movement and the Me Too movement and things like that. Like, for example, I know that there was one host on the E! Entertainment Network that quit her job because her male co-host was making a lot more money than her as well.
Yeah, and as Arvin mentioned last week, one of the BBC presenters that we know here, she was presenting in China, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she found out that her counterpart in the UK was getting paid an awful lot more.
A lot more.
A lot more. I don't know. I mean, Chris, I mean, you know, about this whole pay gap thing, I mean... Yeah. These statistics that we're looking at are from the US.
They are from the US, yes.
Do we have any knowledge of what it's like here in Malaysia or anything like that?
No, not quite. I did try to do a little bit of research, but I couldn't find any numbers for this year. I think it's because this year has just started, to be honest. Mm. But I think it would be interesting to see and compare, because I get the feeling that this is not going to be totally different from what we would find locally as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's more difficult to get the numbers from here because we don't talk about it as much.
That's right.
Yeah, it's always very like vague and who's earning what, and nobody talks about salaries and stuff. Mm. But I don't know if this is a way. So what you're saying is that it starts out the same, and then as it grows, it slowly gets the gap gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
which I don't know if it's a way for people to counter, because people know that millennials are more aware of the gap, mm-hmm. and they're more open about it, and they're more demanding for
equality. Exactly. I think they're the most likely bunch to be sat talking about it, wherever they are.
Yeah, but the problem with that, though, is that we might be talking about it, but then people might not be responding to it and actually, like, you know, fulfilling this equal pay terms, because even if you talk about it, you can't really control as well how much money you get. Up to a point as well.
Which is why I don't know if this is a way for employers to sort of go like, okay, so millennials are aware, so we'll just pay them equally at first, and then after that we'll use things like skills and KPIs and this person's not performing as much. But then if you look at the sheets, it'll show like, why does it show that women are not performing as much as men in that company sheets, you know? Then you can use that as an excuse to sort of have a bigger gap in the future, in like a 10-year plan or whatever.
See, what they claim is that these wage gaps are on account of time spent in the workforce and not a result of lower productivity or skills deficiency, because they say that overall men make more per hour and put in slightly more hours as well. But I kind of don't really feel like, how do they measure that?
Right, and according to that thing from Tesco last week, it shows exactly the opposite.
It shows that they are doing the exact same things, only the different descriptions, but they do the same amount of work.
So it'd be interesting to see where this goes from here.
All right, time for a short break. Music coming up. We have, do we have a message already?
We've got a few messages. So one of them is about story number two, which is about the four-day work week. Mm. This is from Khairul Nizam, who says, 5 days per week was created by Henry Ford 100 years ago.
It was.
We should probably start going for a four-day work week by now, which I agree with. I would like more weekend times. And in relation to this story with the wage gap story, this is from Sulip, who says, what about an age wage gap? Just because you're older doesn't mean you should be paid more than someone younger doing exactly the same job. I agree.
Yeah.
Full-heartedly with
no,
this.
No, that's
Thank
one thing.
You very
but then
much.
There are some people who are over the retirement age who join the workforce again, and they are paid way less.
Yeah.
They're paid often less than fresh graduates.
Yeah. Often less. And because people have this impression that, oh, because you've passed retirement, so you just want to sit here and pass your time, or you know, you don't need the money. So senior citizens are paid a lot less than what they're supposed to be paid.
So yeah, I mean, do continue to message us on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899, and also talk to us on Twitter at BFM Radio, please.
Music coming up, Human League, Don't You Want Me, followed by a little bit of Phoenix with Listomania. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9, you're listening to BizBytes.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. Moving on to story number four in just a second.
Sorry,
but before we get to that...
Yeah, so we just have a little addition from Sulip as well in relation to the wage gap story that we were talking about before the break, which was about gender wage gap. But they brought up the concept of the age wage gap and just say that they're older, by the way, but they remember what it was like when they were younger. And I agree. Please pay me more money.
Hey, I remember what it was like when I was younger as well. Okay, now can I move on to story number four?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, right. Self-healing electronic skin will help robots have a sense of touch like humans.
Because that's what they need, no?
No, they don't need this. Right, tell me more.
Researchers at the University of Colorado Boulder said that they've developed the first fully rehealable and recyclable electronic skin, or e-skin.
Of course it's called e-skin.
Yeah, so it isn't new. It came out in 2011. But this new version can be reused, so it takes away the issue of waste and manufacturing cost. So it basically mimics the functions of human skin, which means it's capable of measuring pressure, temperature, and vibration. They're thinking of using the e-skin for prosthetics and biomedicine. So imagine like a prosthetic leg or an arm that's wrapped in this skin so that it can, the user can respond to temperature and pressure changes as well. Because right now that's the problem with prosthetics. Other than phantom pains, they don't get to actually sense anything with the prosthetics. But this skin is supposed to make them do that. The reason e-skin can fit around any kind of prosthetic limb is because it's made out of a polymer and silver nanoparticles, and it's able to bend according to the shape it's on, like fingers and around your wrists and around your legs. And the best part is the e-skin can heal itself when damaged. So even if it's damaged beyond repair, the e-skin can be soaked in a solution that separates out the silver nanoparticles and then can be fully recycled into new reusable e-skin. So it heals on its own in a solution.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. So
but also really cool.
Yeah.
The fact that you don't have to do any kind of invasive surgery. I don't know if invasive surgery is a thing for that skin that's not human, but that you don't have to patch it up mechanically and it's able to do it itself.
Stick it in a tub. It'll heal times. Wow.
It's basically healing solution or like a fountain of youth for skin.
I really feel like this is the first step in robots really, really taking over, because now we have to wait ages for our skin to do the thing where the white blood cells come and everything is fine. But no, now you can just stick your arm in a liquid, you're good to go.
Shake it around a little bit and that's it.
Yeah, wow. That's it. And it's just fully healed. The thing they want to use it for the most, though, is for robots. Because we've spoken about having robot nurses and robot doctors in the future. So let's say, like, imagine a scenario where there's a robot nurse and it needs to, I was going to say she, but she, the robot nurse, it needs to touch the forehead of a baby to tell its temperature. So the skin can be fitted on the finger of the robot nurse.
Please keep still.
Uh-huh. And then when it touches the forehead of the baby, it can get the temperature reading. But the problem is the robot needs to know when to stop and not press too hard. So it needs to be able to tell pressure.
Yeah.
So it should, as they say, especially when it comes to dealing with the elderly and dealing with the extremely young. So it needs to know when to, how much pressure it can apply to either one, you know, just to not hurt people that it's trying to serve, right?
Okay. So again, this is where, you know, for the prosthetics and for the biomedicine aspect of what this would be used for, I'm fully behind that, because I think that would be great to give back a sense of touch to people who have lost, parts of their body. However, I don't like the idea of robots having skin, guys. I really don't. It just freaks me out as a concept. I don't like it. I don't want robots to know when they're touching things.
No, I mean, if a robot is going to treat you in a hospital, which is going to happen at some point, wouldn't you want it to know how you feel? Like, you don't want it to grip your hand too hard.
I just don't want it to have skin.
Why does that freak you out?
I don't know. I feel like the concept of it makes me just feel like we're going slowly into Terminator territory.
The synths.
Yeah.
That kind of idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like, you know, when you give them the sense of touch, it makes things very personal suddenly. You know, like, it's not just like, oh, this is a metal thing that's poking you.
Right.
This is now...
Mm. You just don't want to feel bad about, you know, accidentally hurting a robot and going, ow.
No, I don't mind that.
Oh, there's the Robin Williams.
Listen, I apologize to photocopiers, so I'm really not in a place where I can do that. But it's more about the fact that it is taking, you know, robots to a very human level that I don't feel very comfortable.
But then I think, you know, for people who are maybe not so comfortable about the idea of, like yourself, of having robots and being very impersonal objects, as it were, if they were made a little bit more human, you know, they could feel, a robot could come in the room and say, oh, it's cold in here, and know because of its skin, and rather than just an internal sensor, you have that idea of it being slightly humanized, which I think would be useful for people like in hospitals and elderly people's homes and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think I could see that that working a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Because I've been all for the robot revolution where whenever it happens, I've been
you
like...
You just want them to rule us.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know if I want them to rule us, but I want them to help us out at least. And I think that I trust... Like I've said it many times, I trust like a robot driver more than I would a human driver in an autonomous car.
To that, I say to any future robots who are listening, teamwork makes the dream work. Please don't just take over. Thank you.
All right, let's take a little music break. Remember, we are asking about the four-day work week, whether or not you think it would work for you. Get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, or of course on Twitter, at BFM Radio. Music coming up from The Strokes here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Barry fronts Motown, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
The Strokes there here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9, in reference, of course, to self-healing electronic skin, which will help robots have a sense of touch.
Mm.
You have nice skin. Right, as usual, on a Monday, we'd like to give you some events that we think you might want to check out throughout the week. Who wants to start then?
I'll start.
Okay.
So, Paper and Toast Free Co-Working Day, that's happening on Thursday, February 15th, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Fahrenheit Office Tower in Bukit Bintang. You can go to experience what co-working is all about. If you're interested in such a thing, if you've never experienced co-working before, then this event is pretty suitable. Just bring your laptop and you can start working, and you can pretty much just see what the concept of co-working is. People who should attend, entrepreneurs who are interested in the co-working concept, and we just had CU Asia over the weekend.
Yeah.
BFM had its own booth there. We had a presence there over in Penang. CU Asia is an event by Hubud. So Hubud is a huge co-working space in Ubud, in Bali, Indonesia. If you're interested to know how co-working works like, then you can head there. You can get tickets for free at ptix.com.
Yeah, and so I've got an event for after the kind of a busy Chinese New Year period, because I know all y'all are going to balik kampung. So this is to jumpstart your business online. It's a little mini workshop happening on Monday, 26th of February, from 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. in Subang Jaya. You should attend this session if you're planning to start a business online, if you're planning to transition and scale your existing business online, if you're keen on networking, and if you're hoping to learn more about digital space and tools, so you can discover how you can scale your business with Beam and digital tools and reach out to more customers digitally. If you're interested, you can get the tickets via PTix. For early birds, it's 20 ringgit. For early birds for two people, it is 30 ringgit. And as a general pass, it is 50 ringgit.
Lovely stuff. That's pretty much all the time that we have for today then. But we'll quickly run through the stories that we've covered, just in case you did miss any part of the show. And of course, you can download the podcast onto the BFM app if you have it. It is available in the Apple App Store or, of course, on Google Play. You can also head over to the website, www.bfm.my/podcast, to listen a little bit later on. So we started off with
some great marketing strategies that you can borrow from the most successful Super Bowl ads.
And quickly moved on to the four-day work week that's been trialed by a company over in New Zealand, with a little bit of how German workers have won the right to 28-hour work week following some industrial action. We did have some feedback on that earlier on as well. Also nice when you do get in touch. Don't forget, anytime we do this show, get in touch via WhatsApp or, of course, via Twitter at BFM Radio. And then we moved on to...
Then we moved on to how the gender pay gap might be smaller for millennials and other age groups, but it also may be increasing faster.
Then we spoke about how there's a self-healing electronic skin that will help robots have a sense of touch.
And Christine's really not a fan of that.
See, to that I say, follow the MC Hammer song. Can't touch this.
Oh dear.
They should program that into the robots.
That's why there's a millennial pay gap.
Ouch.
Anyway, it's time to wrap up. But don't go anywhere, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, of course, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. It's quite a short one today. It is with Fareed Zakaria, who's the host of CNN's Fareed Zakaria GPS.
Mm-hmm.
So described as the most influential foreign policy advisor of his generation, Fareed Zakaria is the host of CNN's Fareed Zakaria's GPS, the network's flagship international affairs program and a destination for those seeking smart commentary and civil conversation about the big ideas and the current global challenges. The Breakfast Grill spoke to him on the sidelines of the World Capital Markets Symposium 2018 and discuss the issues that are affecting our time. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Don't go anywhere, though. Music coming up first from Edwyn Collins and a little bit of Cake. Not actual Cake, but the song by the band.
Damn.
It is, all right. But the song is Short Skirt, Long Jacket, so it's all good stuff. Anyway, that's all coming up in just a couple of minutes. And, of course, stay tuned for that Breakfast Grill replay. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, at noon, from deepest, darkest band at Atama. This has been Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.